And that's only when our map of reality and reality, there's a big distance between those two. And the space between our map of reality and what's actually happening is the space where magic lives, or pain and suffering, right? If your belief about this relationship or this person or yourself is really far away from what the evidence is showing you, that's the space where suffering happens.
That was Jonathan Pritchard, and this is the All Things Risk Podcast. Welcome back to the All Things Risk Podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo, your host. This is my show. And yes, I know at the start of every episode, I say that this is a show about risk, resilience, uncertainty, and randomness through long-form conversations with interesting people. But guess what? This is the end of the month of October, and once again, October has exceeded September for the highest number of downloads in any one month, which means that even though I really don't know what I'm doing with this podcasting thing, I must be doing something right. So at each episode, I'm getting a few new listeners, which is great. So I have to tell them what the show's about, and that's why I do that. So I don't know how to get around it. If you have any suggestions, and hey, if you have any suggestions about the show in general, I would love to hear from you. I really want to make sure or want to get better at this or get as good at this as I possibly can. And if you have any suggestions, you can send them to allthingsrisk@gmail.com. I would really love to hear from you. Or you can send a tweet, or you can go on to allthingsrisk.co.uk, or you can check out our Facebook page or whatever. I would love to hear from you, so do check out those avenues. I want to get right into my guest today because it is a great conversation. I always say that, but it's true. Today's guest is Jonathan Pritchard, and Jonathan is a mentalist or a mind reader, an entertainer. He was featured on a show called America's Got Talent. And that's, I think we have a show in the UK called Britain's Got Talent. I'm sorry, I don't watch either of them, but if I'm sure you've heard of the show or maybe you've seen it. But he's an amazing guy. As he's a mind reader, mentalist, magician, coach, author, and he's also a podcast host. He has a show called A Life Well Designed and a website of the same name. And guess what? Yours truly was on his most recent episode. He's also a martial artist. He studies Wing Chun, and we do talk about that. And we start the whole conversation, and I hadn't met Jonathan before the conversation, so I started asking him about this whole mind reading thing, and I don't know anything about it. And I found that really fascinating to open up with, and it is interesting. But of course, you know, no one can really read anyone's mind, at least not in the way that we think we can or that we see in the movies. But what actually is more interesting, and we really get into this, is discussing why mind reading works, why somebody like Jonathan can get up in front of an audience and start to tell people what street they lived on and who their families were and all of this kind of stuff, and how to take that mechanism and apply it to other areas. So how it can be used to take risks successfully, how to improve performance, how to manage uncertainty. And that's exactly where we go into in this conversation. And it's fascinating stuff. It's really interesting. And I think you're going to thoroughly enjoy it. We talk about all sorts of things. We do talk about martial arts, and we talk about coaching, and we talk a little bit about podcasting and all sorts of things. And I know you're going to really enjoy this conversation. I don't want to delay it any further. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's Jonathan Pritchard. Enjoy. Jonathan, thank you for joining me today on the All Things Risk Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you. And, you know, I think we're going to have a great...
Glad to be here. Yeah.
Thank you. No, I think we're going to have a great conversation. first things first, I just wanted to, so I'm turning into this, I don't have a set of questions, but now I've started to ask the same question of all my guests, which is, when people ask you what you do, what's your response?
Oh, when people ask me what I do, I actually tell them, here's what I'm passionate about.
Okay.
I am passionate about connecting with other people and building relationships through effective communication skills. Like, that's what really gets me going. Hmm. And every project that I have that brings money in is just another way of expressing that curiosity.
Okay.
So that's yeah,
awesome.
That's kind of the long answer, because, you know, at a cocktail party, people, when they're asking you what you do, what they're really asking you is, how can I pigeonhole you as quickly as possible to figure out whether I can make use of you or not?
I love that. Yeah.
I like to sidestep that as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's a great response. I go after people on my show that really struggle to answer that question, because I think that they make the most interesting people that you can encounter, because they'll have loads of stuff to talk about, versus the people that say, well, I'm a this or I'm a that. Yeah, you're right. People just sort of pigeonhole you, and then they kind of either they move on, or
my honest, like, okay, if I weren't going to give you that pitch of, here's what I'm passionate about, mm-hmm. which is a great qualifier answer mm-hmm. for my clients, mm-hmm. right? If you don't agree with what I just said, we're not a good match for each other. Mm. So it helps me pigeonhole them really fast, but it leaves the cards open for them to understand what it is that I do. But short answer is, I'm a mind reader. For the past 10 years, I've made a living touring the country, America, and a little internationally as a mentalist and a mind reader. So basically, think of a magician who is on stage for a 70-minute show, but instead of doing tricks with things and objects like tigers and women, I'm doing tricks with information. So I go out on stage and I can convince a room full of 2,000 hardened skeptics that I can read minds. Or at least a really good demonstration of what it would look like if you could actually read minds.
Wow.
Yeah, so I often don't tell people that, because I also know on the plane, that is going to be the most interesting job. Mm-hmm. And then I'm into exactly the same conversation I have at cocktail parties. So I like to mix it up for myself. So that's why I'm like, and then, I'm passionate about connecting with people.
Sure.
So connecting that I read their minds.
Right.
That's basically it.
Very cool. Otherwise, you just get into, can you do that? Can you do a demonstration right now?
Exactly. And that's the funniest joke in my show to me, because, okay, when you're designing a stage show, and especially one that is centered only around audience participation, that's a really dangerous thing. Because the success of your show that people are paying money for is now predicated on how good a volunteer you can get from the audience. So if you are expecting a comedy show, like a comedian show where the comedian does crowd work, where they make fun of where people are from, well, then the only people that are going to volunteer for my show are the wisecracks that are going to try to have a battle of wits.
Okay.
And that might be intellectually fun for me to keep me on my toes, but now that sets a combative relationship between me and the audience. Mm. So I have to, at the very beginning, say, now I know it can be uncomfortable being in the same room as a mind reader. I give you my word as a person, not as a performer, that I will never reveal anything embarrassing about you. Unless it's hilarious, then all bets are off. But really, I know that if the show is amazing, it's because you guys have made it amazing. I could tell you what I'm thinking, but that's in no way amazing. So as a mind reading show, you guys make this an incredible experience. So I want everybody that volunteers tonight, because you're going to make the show awesome. And I want to make sure that you understand I'm going to treat you with love and respect. And you as an audience are going to support anybody and everybody that comes up on stage tonight with the exact same love and respect. Sound good? And then everybody goes, yep. and now we're into the show.
Yeah, cool.
Excellent. So that's kind of a, I like to call it my kumbaya opener, where I help people understand, okay, he's not going to make fun of me. He's not going to make me look like an idiot in front of my friends. If my mom goes up on stage, I won't be worried that he's going to have a horrible experience for her, right? So with that framework, imagine you go through half of the 70-minute show, and then I say this. I love my job. I love everything about my job. I get to travel the world. I get to meet amazing people. There's only one thing that I don't like, and that's telling people what I do for a living. Because the instant I say, I'm a mind reader, the first thing people say is, read my mind, right? And yeah, then everybody laughs. So then I say, well, I have to laugh like it's the first time I've ever heard that. And then I tell them what day they're going to die. Right? So that takes a really dark turn real fast that they were not seeing coming. So to me, that's my favorite joke in the entire show because of the context that they experience it in. Is he's such a nice guy. This is wonderful. And I feel great about, what day I'm going to die. And it's just a little reminder that, you know, if somebody
can make this dark, if you'd like to,
it would be a scary, scary person to be around. Mm-hmm. So I like playing on that a little bit.
That's awesome. That's very cool. How did you get into that? How did you get into mind reading and mentalism? Where did that come from? Is that something that you always aspire to do?
Long story short, it's very similar to magicians. Magicians always have the same story. I saw a magician when I was 5 years old, and it made such an impression on me that I had to do it myself. And that's kind of the story I had. I saw a magician on the Carson Show, which is a variety show that was really popular way back in the day. And I saw the magician on that show and went, wait a minute. If I'm him, I get to work with those beautiful assistants. Okay, I'm in. And that was what I wanted to do from then on. So I'm one of the few cases where it's somebody that goes, okay, I have a burning passion and I know exactly what I want to do with my life. And I realized that eventually, too long ago, was that it actually wasn't a story where the passion worked out, right? Because I think telling people, follow your passion, is one of the worst things that you could tell somebody.
That's
because it's a great reason for them to destroy their life. Because they might be passionate about something that they don't have the skill sets yet to make it a full-time business and a viable way of supporting themselves. So with their passion, they decide to destroy a life that is provided a place to live, things to eat, just throw all that on the altar of following my passion. And then 3 years later, they're worse off than if they had done it as kind of a side hustle and then discovered whether or not they're actually good at it and turning it into a business. So that's why I love the side hustle, building something on the side while you keep your day job. And then if that grows too big, then that tells you that it's a safe bet to transition into doing that full time. But saying to someone, just follow your passion.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know how many people have that passion? Not that many people. So if you're going to tell people, you know what? Make your life your passion. And then they go, well, I don't have a passion. Now you're just basically telling them that they should feel like a jerk for not having a passion. Right. So now you're just saying, well, be cool like me. Why aren't you more like me? Just be me. And that is a real, real bummer thing to do to somebody. But it was when I realized it wasn't that I was passionate about being a magician or a mentalist or a mind reader. I was intensely curious about exercising my creativity and that the mentalism was a fantastic context for me to exercise my creativity on every level. And when I realized that, it actually freed me up to pursue other interests that I had that actually created even more opportunities for me than being the mentalist, right? Because as an entertainer, that is an invaluable service to show people a window into an amazing world they couldn't even imagine. Just even if it's for 70 minutes, that's a beautiful thing, because then they go back out into their life and go, you know what? Maybe I could do something if I put my mind to it. Like, I loved that. But over the years, after kind of growing up on my own, reading books and doing magic tricks, in junior high, I started figuring out that the mind reading stuff worked even better, because okay. I could spend a year working on a card trick that was very difficult to do and then pull it off perfectly. The person would still go, yeah, I could do that too if I had that trick deck of cards.
Right.
No matter how much you practiced, no matter how much skill you had, the perception was always, well, it's trick deck or something. But the mind reading stuff, oh man, a teenage kid that could tell you what street you grew up on, that is terrifying. That is scary. So I loved that kind of impact that I could have on someone's life to just totally blow through their day-to-day fuzz and really deliver this experience that is deeply unsettling, which made them question how they approach life. Like, that's awesome to me. So over the years, I went on tour with a full-time entertainer who was already in the market that I wanted to work on. So I toured with him for a year and a half to learn the business side of doing shows. So that's how I learned how to take my interest and make a business from it. And then over the past 10 years doing shows, it slowly dawned on me that, you know, doing the show is awesome. I love entertaining the crowd and seeing their minds just break open. That is awesome. And then having an autograph line afterwards makes me feel like a rock star, right? It's nice to be loved. And then I started to notice that there would be one, maybe two, three people standing off to the side, letting everybody else go through the line. And it started to be instantly recognizable. And those are the people that after everybody left, they come up and go, you are living the dream. How in the world are you doing this awesome thing? I can't even imagine where to start doing that. And then for me, that's just the way I've always lived. So it was kind of a no-brainer. And then that's when I figured out these are my first coaching clients. Those were the first people that I was talking about mindset. Here's how to approach a new market. Just here's how to think about your skills and what you bring to the table. And even though it's easy for you, it's not easy for everybody else. And sometimes that's the best thing to build a business on, is that which you find easy to do, but people will pay you lots of money for it.
That's so very cool.
My coaching clients. And then I expanded the focus to be, wait a minute, I'm intensely curious about understanding why people do what they do and understanding how they tick, like the fundamental mechanisms at work. And then that's when I opened up to doing coaching and speaking opportunities about the life that I've built over the past couple decades.
There's so much great stuff in there. I'd like to maybe dive in on a few things. I really like the comment about the side hustle. And this also, this is a show about risk and and the side hustle is a great way of taking risk, because it's, you know, you're kind of protecting the kind of downside, but you're experimenting. I think experimentation is a wonderful way to live your life, just trying out a few things and seeing if you like them, and if you do, you just sort of keep going and keep going until you can transition into something new. But to drop everything and say, right, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to quit my job, and you know, the universe will, you know there's a saying that the universe kind of aligns to to assist you, which I think there's maybe a little bit
in the direction of your dreams.
Something like that. And I think, you know, it may be that I do think that you start to see opportunities where you probably didn't before, because you are shifting your mindset. But but to just drop everything and just, you know, think positively and it will all come to you, I think is not a good strategy. You have to test things out.
It is ludicrous, absolute ludicrous to just go all in on something you're completely unfamiliar with. And to the point of the experimentation, success is iterative. You I love to live my life like an experiment.
Hmm.
And that frees me up from identifying with a failure and feeling like a failure. I just go, well, that's an interesting result.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'll take what it from I can learn and then apply that to the next experiment. So I love living like an experiment. Mm-hmm. But the side hustle is perfect because, you know, before the internet, I think we are still not even close to fully understanding the full impact that the internet has on how we live life. Because I'm one of the lucky few in the generation grew up before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually remember looking through the card catalog and information was very difficult to access. But
yes.
Now you've got information everywhere on anything instantly. So way back in the day, it was actually really difficult to start a business.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go to learn how to start a business? I mean, every single thing that you would have to do was an uphill struggle. You might have to go find investors or market test this idea.
You'd have to go to business school and you'd have to, you know, all this
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now the business schools don't even know how to teach some of this stuff that are very viable businesses.
Exactly. So now if you can set up a website and then plug in PayPal, you can start offering value to the whole world and make it very easy for people to give you money for what it is you know and do already.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it right, you can set it up that can happen even when you're asleep. So now it's never been easier to stop trading your time for money and instead leverage your knowledge and experience about things people find value in and then making it easy for them to give
right.
you money for it.
At the same time, I absolutely agree with you. At the same time, I think that the reality that sort of thing exists also creates a sort of dual thing where actually it's easy, right? So I can just start my own business, you know, online, and people will give me money, and you know, I can stop my day job. Or the millennial generation, you know, is you know,
right.
you hear this stuff about, well, I'm just going to follow my passion and become an entrepreneur. When you know, actually, that's true, but you also have to, you know, you have to do the work, and you have to do that experimentation and all that iterative stuff to be able to get there.
Yeah, even though it is as easy as it's ever been, it's still a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because nobody's gonna put the success in your hands for you. You gotta go dig for it. And a big obstacle I discovered a lot of people had when I would talk to them about this is, well, it's easy for you because you're an entertainer and you go out and do a couple shows and now you've made several months worth of bills and now you've got the rest of your month to do whatever you want. So I'm going to use that as an excuse for me to not try to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very frustrating to me to see that excuse all the time. So living life like it's an experiment, I got a full-time job as an experiment. So I got a graphic designer job at a social media marketing company.
Okay.
Right? They managed the social profiles for companies and brands that you would recognize. I got a job designing the images that they would use to post on Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of fun stuff. So what I would do is I would show up an hour early before anybody else ever even got to the office. It was downtown Chicago. It was beautiful. So I would get to the office and then spend an hour building my own business, alifewelldesigned.com, which is my kind of experiment and resource to help people reframe their experience and kind of learn how to think about decision making, right? So I built that business while having a full-time job on an hour a day, 5 days a week. And that's
right.
it.
Right.
That's as much time as I would spend on it. And it's working.
Yeah.
So I love pointing to that and going, you know what? I had a full-time job when I was doing this and building it. And I found time for it. Actually, I didn't find time for it. I made the time
sure.
for it. Yeah, it's not like you can lift the carpet and then find time.
Yes, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There aren't little time units distributed around that you can find on the street somewhere. You have to craft it. You have to make it. Just like we make money, we make time. Mm-hmm. So when people say, I don't have the time to start a business and all that kind of stuff, I always like to point out, well, you're just not making the time to do it, which is kind of a blunt way to approach it. Mm. But I've found the direct approach is usually the most effective.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah. I wanted to connect a couple of dots, but maybe they're not that connected, but you'll tell me in a moment. But
yeah,
being a mentalist and a mind reader, I've seen some of those types of shows and things, and I don't know how it all works, but I know there are sort of tricks. I guess you would call them tricks,
or
techniques maybe to infer things people, you know, that people might say, and that kind of leads you to where to take the conversation.
Right.
I imagine there's certain patterns that most people exhibit that allow you to do that. So I'm wondering if you can maybe talk a little bit about that, but also how that has maybe helped in your coaching and the other sort of work that you do, because I imagine they're very, very similar. If someone's exhibits for a short period of time a certain pattern of thinking that you can then kind of exploit to put on a good show, you could do the same thing for coaching. Is that fair?
It'd be great to dive into that a little bit. Yeah, there are a couple facets,
mm-hmm.
and there are some really big ideas, and I'm going to try not to lose track of them.
No problem. And if you do, we'll bring it back. But as I mentioned to you, going off on tangents is fine around here, so not a problem.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right. So magicians and mentalists are lying to you, and they are essentially the most honest liars you will ever meet. Because it is understood that in this context, what is about to happen is I'm going to lie to you and tell the truth. And if I do my job right, they will be indistinguishable from each other.
Hmm.
Now, magicians and mentalists have to be perfect communicators.
Hmm.
They're phenomenal communicators because to perfectly execute a lie, to make it indistinguishable from the truth, you have to be really good at understanding exactly what it is you're communicating.
Mm-hmm.
So magicians and mentalists actually are phenomenal communicators. And communication is kind of the universal skill set, right? How you communicate with yourself, how you communicate mm-hmm. with other people, and it is the universal skill of building relationships. The quality of your relationships are directly proportional to your communication skills. If you have horrible relationships, it's probably because your communication skills suck, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the confidence to start your own business or strike out on your own, that's because of your communication skills with yourself and how it is you understand your approaches and mindset and all that kind of stuff, right? So being a phenomenal communicator is kind of base level ground zero for being good at building relationships. And relationships are the most powerful force in your life.
Hmm.
Like, that's it. It's the most amazing force in your life. And with the right relationships, you can do anything, right? And it's not just relationships with other people. It's also, again, your relationship with yourself. It's also your relationship with your problems, with your thinking. Your relationship with every single area of your life dictates the quality of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to improve everything, improve your ability to communicate. And magicians and mentalists are uniquely qualified to understand that fundamental process. They understand it so well that they can then hijack it and create false realities that feel completely real.
Hmm.
Right? So here's the second facet. Here's every single magic trick and mind reading trick you will ever see. Here's the fundamental secret. So the mentalist creates a context for logical assumptions that are later shown to not be true.
Hmm.
That is the fundamental framework for every single magic trick, every single mind reading trick you've ever seen. There's a lot packed in there.
Yeah, right? I was just about to ask, can we dive into that a little bit?
I spent years thinking about that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like a 90-mile-an-hour drive-by. The mentalist is the agent of action, which everybody is the creator of their own reality and their own life.
Okay.
Right? So a magician can take what is here and then just create this fantastic experience that seems impossible, right? Mm. And everybody has that capacity. Mm. Everybody has that capability. They may just not have had a lot of experience doing it and recognizing that that's what they're doing, right?
Mm.
So the mentalist creates a context. Everything we understand is in relationship to something else. That is the context that we operate under.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that context is also predicated on a lot of assumptions about reality, about yourself, about the other person, that may not actually even be true. But we bring those assumptions to the table based on prior experience and our beliefs based on those experiences that are usually brought online when we're a kid. So a lot of us are navigating our lives with the intellectual and fundamental framework of a kid, right? Of a child. And it's really difficult to even be aware of those assumptions you're making. Hmm. It would be like, have you ever walked up the stairs and thought there was one more stair than there actually was?
Yeah, sure.
Right? And how disorienting that is. There's no way to fake that kind of experience. And that's only when our map of reality and reality, there's a big distance between those two. Hmm. And the space between our map of reality and what's actually happening is the space where magic lives.
Hmm.
Or pain and suffering, right? If your belief about this relationship or this person or yourself is really far away from what the evidence is showing you, that's the space where suffering happens.
Right? Yeah.
But it's really difficult to get an outsider's perspective on what your assumptions are.
Hmm.
Right? That's why, to me, it is so fundamentally important to have an expert of somebody who understands exactly what this process is to see what's going on in your life.
Hmm.
So then those assumptions later shown to not be true in the context of a magic show, of a mind reading show, that's a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safe place to experience that wonder and that same kind of disorientation that the stare gives you. But it's a gentleman's agreement that this is a fun experience and you've paid money for this and I'm good at what I do and you can relax and just enjoy the show.
Yeah.
But outside that context, that's where con men come in.
Hmm.
That's where psychic readers come in.
Hmm.
Give me your family's inheritance and I will let you talk to your dead grandma one more time.
Right.
Right. To me, that is morally reprehensible.
Yes.
And that's where I draw my line of integrity.
Yes.
Is that in the context of a show, I don't care what you say, but as soon as you're off stage and you're still claiming to be able to talk to dead people, nope. That is a question and an issue of integrity. And I will fight you tooth and nail about that.
Hmm.
So that's why a mentalist and myself really understands how people tick and why they do what they do. So I'm about to go to the third facet, which is my educational background, which is as a designer and a visual artist, painting and that kind of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about the design process. A lot of people love kind of designer labels and that kind of thing because it's always an elegant solution to a problem or an issue, right? Think about the iPhone, the most valuable product that human beings have ever created, basically, right? But how do you get
so
there?
So far, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the cool thing is there's something going to be even better just next year. Like you never know what people are going to come up with. And I love that.
Yeah.
So the design process that creates the most amazing, valuable products is it just boils down to a series of making choices. That's all it is. For the body, do we use steel or aluminum? Well, steel will interfere with the cell signal. So let's use aluminum. Okay. Next question. Right? So you just go through a series of asking questions in a very specific way, you create value, right? Well, the lives we live are the results of the choices that we make. So we're actively designing our lives. It's just that most people don't take ownership of that process.
Sure. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's why everybody's a designer. They just don't own that process. They still think that life is happening to them and all these problems are happening to them. instead of understanding the full weight and consequences of the choices that they make every day, all day long. So what governs how people make choices? Their fundamental psychology and psychological processes that I, as a mind reader, leverage in the context of a show. So if you can marry those two things, the design process and system of making choices, with understanding why people do what they do and make the choices that they make, combine those two together, you can have a powerful system of helping people make the choices and make the differences in their life that they've always wanted, but lack the confidence to make happen because every way they've tried to do it already has failed because they don't understand the fundamental processes that are always going to be working in the background regardless. It's now you can make them work for you instead of just on autopilot under the radar, basically.
Right.
So that's
right.
The elevator pitch for A Life Well Designed, which is the project where I combine my educational background with my experiential background to help people make differences in businesses, relationships, and basically their life in general.
Very cool and very profound. I'm kind of curious, and we can get into Life Well Designed in a moment, but just in your experience doing this, in terms of some of those assumptions that people kind of carry with them, are there things that you see that are very common with people in terms of the assumptions that they kind of hold and carry around with them? And it might be things like, you know, I have to get married, I have to buy a house, I have to, you know, do all these things.
Yep.
Are there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I like to call that the standard social narrative.
Right.
We're all sold that myth of here's how society works. Here's what you do as a constructive member of society. And it sounds trite, but that's usually first installed by your parents. The relationship that your parents have kind of sets your template for what you think an adult grown-up relationship is supposed to look like.
Yes.
So you grow up with that pattern installed very deep down, very early, and then the mind actively filters out everything that does not support that assumption. Like, our brains are amazing at filtering out information. And no matter what it is that you believe, you're going to find something to support it. That's what our brains are designed to do and are phenomenally good at. And usually people think the assumption is, well, that's just the way I am. That's just how things work. But really what's happened is that's the strategy they've used over a lifetime. So that's the strategy that's easiest for them to use and therefore becomes second nature.
Yeah.
Say, like, I can juggle fire. I can hammer nails up my nose. And I remember how difficult those things were to learn to do. So I understand now that that's just a skill I've learned to use.
Right.
But it took effort to learn it. So if you can really help people understand that these are just mental models of how they think the world should work, then it frees them up to try on new mental models, try different heuristics, like ideas about how the world works, and then see what results they get them. So it's not so much if they're right or wrong. It's just, is this way of thinking about reality serving you or not?
Yes.
So yeah, that's the biggest assumption that I find is, here's how the world should work. And that's where most of the pain comes from.
Yes.
A great note about those assumptions is that, think about this in the context of a mind reading show, right? People will believe what they tell themselves so much more than anything I could tell them.
Okay.
So this is incredibly powerful. So if I just tell somebody this is a normal deck of cards, well, then they're going to say, well, that is now a point of contention. Every assertion I make is now a point of combat that they can attack. Then they go, okay, why did he say that? There's obviously something tricky about those cards. That's how this trick works. However, if I build the proper context through my behavior, through what I actually don't say, I create this context where they think, and this isn't even conscious level. They just assume that, well, he handed me the cards, so it has to be a normal deck of cards. Otherwise, he wouldn't have handed it to me. Now it's a miracle. Right? So they've trusted themselves when they finally come to that conclusion that, nope, this is a normal deck of cards. They will now believe that to the core of their person more than anything I could assert to them. So really, the most powerful change comes from being able to show people themselves and then show where it's not meeting their needs. And then they, quote unquote, come to that conclusion. But really, it's that given this context, people tend to do this, right? Whatever that context is and whatever the outcome is, right? That's why I look so witty as a performer. Somebody says a joke once and then I don't have a comeback for it, right? So that first time I'm taken off guard and I think, oh, that's hilarious, right?
Yeah.
But now every show from then on, I have a witty comeback for that because just like when I say I'm a mind reader and someone goes, read my mind, right? That's a natural reaction to them. I've seen it 1,000 times, but to that person, that is the first organic response that they come up with.
That's
I create that response in them based on their assumptions about the situation that they're in, but that's where I live. That is my reality every day, all day long. But this is the first mind-blowing experience that they're having.
That's very cool.
How powerful assumptions are.
I'm doing exactly right now as you describe. So, because I look at the world in terms of risk, okay?
Yeah.
And I just wanted, and I wanted to. So, this is like layers of stuff wrapped into layers of stuff. But what I wanted to talk about is with all of that said about taking risks. And I've been reading a lot about. So I'm into endurance sports. I'm into cycling and running and things like that. And I really, you know, really enjoy that. I look at some of the people who are in endurance sports and who've done really well, and they almost get obsessive about it. But these people that, you know, have had addiction, they've had, you know, a lot of personal trauma. If you look at the people who are really, some people who are really at the sort of top echelons of ultra, particularly ultra endurance stuff. So we're not talking about marathons, ultra marathons, this kind of stuff.
Okay, running through the desert for 100 miles.
Yeah, kind the Marathon des Sables, you know, this kind of stuff. And a lot of times these are people that have been through something quite traumatic. And your comment about assumptions, the way you look at assumptions, that really resonates. Because I think for a lot of those people, all those assumptions got smashed when they hit bottom. Right now, I'm not a recovering addict, and most people aren't. But I think most people have something that they want to do or they want to achieve, but they're still living in, you know, this world of assumptions. Organizations do that as well. When I work with organizations about taking risks, it's all about challenging assumptions.
Yeah,
but that process of trying to actually, without, you know, hitting rock bottom, to really challenge your worldview, so I can go out and do something quite significant that I've always really wanted to do, becomes challenging because people get stuck in ruts and, you know, this kind of thing, particularly when things are comfortable. And you know, again, you could talk about this on an individual basis or on a you know, wider organizational or even a societal basis. When we get really comfortable, we tend not to take risks because we have a fear of losing what we have, or, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, that's the biggest one for sure.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering how would you coach or you know, work with someone to kind of pick out what those assumptions are that could be, you know, in some ways self-limiting, so that they can go on and you know, take the kind of risks that they probably should be taking to do the kinds of things that they really want to do.
For me, I've found that the number one assumption that does the most good for people is getting rid of the assumption that these problems are happening to them. Right? And a phenomenal exercise for that is taking responsibility for everything that happens for just a single day.
Right. Okay.
Right. Not that it's blaming or it's your fault. Just take responsibility for everything you see. And that little shift in mindset really hammers home the importance and weight that what you choose to do about the situation you're in, how you create that own reality. Right? So that first level of assumption of changing it from an external to an internal location of control, right?
Right.
And helping people really take ownership of, I'm choosing this path.
Right.
Every day with my choices,
right.
I'm choosing this path.
Right.
So that shift of responsibility and control is powerful. The second thing I feel like is learning something new is a great way to get you out of a rut, because you get into that same pattern of going, well, this is the way I do things. This is who I am. My family is this way. And the minute you learn something new, you're opening up your world of possibility. And you start to understand that you can make a difference. You can affect change. You can make something be different than what you thought it could be. Right? That's the transformational magic of the magician, right? That's why it's an archetype, is it's real, right? So as soon as you start learning something new, you start getting more confidence that maybe I could learn a new way of doing something. And action is always the antidote. To me, taking action, I don't even really care what the action is. Just taking action instead of inaction is almost always better than not.
Right.
It's just like in martial arts.
Yeah.
I like to think about problems, any problem, whether it's business, relationship, whatever. I like to think of every problem like somebody is trying to punch me in the face. So what do I do about it? Do I just think about it? Do I just talk to a friend about this fist that is coming at me? But none of that makes sense. The only thing that matters is what I choose to do about it. What am I going to do? Do I move my head out of the way? Do I intercept it? Like, what's the action I'm going to take? So that to me is another big piece of the puzzle that most people ignore, right? Because understanding why you're making the choices you're making is a huge piece of the puzzle. It'll unlock a lot of opportunities and new ways of seeing the world. But none of that is useful if you don't put it into practice. So you have to take action on those new ways of thinking. You have to take action with those new strategies. So almost always, it's just go take risk. Go think of it like an experiment and go fail a lot. And you're going to fail. And the only way that you're going to succeed is to learn how not to do it. And to me, the reason why so many high achievers have had such horrible experiences is that those experiences, if you can learn the lesson from them, teach you how great you can be, because you've gone through the horrible part and you survived. Now you can survive the successful part of that same equation, right? So if you've never gone through anything traumatic or life-changing, you don't really have that big a reason to change. But you still access that same desire to change by reading books, talking to people, listening to podcasts, right? Reading books and learning through someone else's experience is another powerful form of mind reading. Right? The author has an idea, traps that idea in words, traps those words in a book, sends it across the world, and then you, years later, open it up and have the same ideas. That's amazing. And why that books in the written word is pretty much the first form of technology that we humans had. It's amazing how powerful books can be. So that to me is wonderful. You can have conversations with the smartest people throughout history.
No, really good advice. And it, I think it's something that, you know, we all struggle with from time to time. The other, I guess the flip side of that is, when I hear this a lot, that, sometimes people get afraid of success, or, you know, that, that, and it's also, you know, a change that could be a, you know, a positive change. There, there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of behaviors that people can exhibit once they've plateaued, you get people that plateau that you see a lot in organizations, or you know, just generally, you know, someone kind of achieve something and then kind of, you know, that kind of drops off where they don't know how to manage that success. Or, you know, conversely, that they do, you know, there's a bit of self-sabotage, not conscious, but unconscious.
Sure.
And I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah. And for me, again, it boils down to those fundamental assumptions about mm-hmm. what that success means, mm-hmm. because a lot of people think, well, I now have to work really hard to earn a living and be successful, right? Because that's installed really young. And it's usually to install a sense of integrity and honesty and the good hard work that you put in, right? But if you find amazing ways of offering value to people, you don't have to work so hard anymore. Hmm. And suddenly you freed up your time to enjoy what that hard work has made possible. So people feel guilty about making a great living without having to work really hard for it all the time.
Yeah.
So then they make up for that by putting in 18-hour days at the office and all that kind of stuff, because of the fundamental misalignment of their belief about what it means to be successful. So then they do self-sabotage because the reality isn't in alignment with what they believe what success means. So then they try to force reality in, and it doesn't work. In the other assumptions, right, of I'm a country bumpkin from the mountains of North Carolina. Like, that's where I grew up, right? And how do I, as this kid from North Carolina, start traveling the world and entertaining audiences and being on TV, all that kind of stuff? Like, what kind of audacious upstart is that, right? You need to settle down, know your place, shut up, be quiet, get in line, right? So that's programming that I've got deep down in there, but I've understood that that's not real. It's not me. Since I can see it, it's not that fundamental awareness, and therefore isn't who I am. And now I can try something else on that works for me better. And so for me, I think it's a lot of times people get successful, they don't have the positive idea models of how to experience that success, and therefore are destroyed by it because they haven't talked with people that have been there, done that, and learned positive ways of handling it. So then their internal kind of happiness thermostat brings them right back down to where they were, where they're comfortable, where they know what these problems are. And I would rather live with these problems and not the achievement than create a whole new level of problems that I don't even know how to approach. But one of my favorite people on the planet told me, he goes, you know, if you have the exact same problems next year as you have this year, you're not growing. So my idea of success is just having more interesting problems next year, because I don't know what they're going to be. I can't even fathom the problems that I'm going to be dealing with next year, but I am experiencing some really cool problems this year, and I love it, because you're never going to get rid of problems. They're always going to be there.
Yeah, that's
you can just get better problems.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's also, you know, we talked about suffering and disappointment, you know, earlier, and I think part of that comes from, you know, that mindset that once I get, you know, this job or, you know, this amount of money or whatever, all my problems will be resolved, and it never works out that way.
Or the other assumptions, like rich people are jerks,
right?
That I'm too busy to be successful because I have a family to support and this is the only way that'll work, right? All those scripts, all those internal ideas about how reality is supposed to happen holds people back from creating a life for themselves that is amazing, that there is time if you make it. And creating value for other people is one of the best ways to do it.
Very cool. I want to talk a little bit about, actually want to talk about martial arts a little bit, because I know that you practice Kung Fu, and I'm a martial artist as well. And it's interesting, I've had actually several people that are actually very involved in martial arts on my show, or have practiced martial arts. And what do you study, and why do you study it, and what do you get out of it?
Gotcha.
You don't strike me as a guy who's a bodyguard or training. You could be training for a UFC bout, but
right.
You're probably a little too busy for that.
Not me. For me, I practice Wing Chun Kung Fu. The lineage is very important, all that kind of fun stuff. Yep. But basically, my instructor that I met, we met at a science conference in Las Vegas. That's all about critical thinking skills and that kind of fun stuff. So he wasn't going to waste my time trying to learn how to shoot chi bullets at people. Yeah. So I go, okay, that's one of the biggest problems I have with instructors get too far into the mystical woo-woo side. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the hard reality of a interpersonal conflict or martial arts, whatever, it gets really mystical anyway on just the basic reality part. You don't have to add in a whole bunch of extra crap anyway. So for me, I see martial arts and Kung Fu specifically as a system of cultivating personal integrity. So that's why, to me, it's self-defense. Learning how to impose your will on somebody else is actually a lot harder and almost always leaves you open, because you really have to compromise your integrity to try to impose your will on somebody else. So my study of Kung Fu won't necessarily let me beat up anybody on the planet, but it'll make it a little more difficult for you to do it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for me, it's the daily practice of cultivating personal integrity to maintain that integrity in relationship to a dynamic situation. And life on the fundamental level is incredibly dynamic.
Yeah.
So no matter what level somebody tries to communicate with me, I now am equipped to maintain my integrity no matter what. Whether it's a physical attack, it might even be a negotiation for the price of a car, or a date. Right? That can be a very stressful situation, and you lose sense of who you are and maybe compromise your integrity. That's unacceptable to me. So it is the study of personal preservation and cultivating integrity, whether it's physical, emotional, social, whatever level you want to talk about it. The principles that govern my personal security are applicable across the board. So really, all of my clients that I work with are actually learning Kung Fu. They just don't know it.
All right. Okay.
So one of the reasons why I can speak on this stuff with authority is I have the experience from the performing, but also from the practice of Kung Fu every morning, which helped me set up the structure of my life. Like, I wake up every morning and then I do my Kung Fu. Like, that's it. No matter if I'm on the road, no matter how tired I am, I start my day with intention and a structure that I have chosen for myself, which plays into every other part of my day. I don't allow other people to control my attention. I don't allow other people to control how I spend my time. I don't allow other people to control the projects I work on. And all of that, to me, is a level of personal integrity.
Very, very cool. One of the things that I really like about martial arts is just that mind-body connection. And we really lack it a lot of times, particularly in Western societies. We think it's all about, just only rational thinking. And, there's a lot going on in, as you said, a negotiation, a meeting, the ability to kind of gauge people's emotional states, their intentions, whether or not you sense some fear coming from the other person. All of that plays into all our interactions. And studying martial arts gives you a better way of being in touch with all of that than we would otherwise. I'm huge on I think everyone should spend some time studying a martial art of some kind, and I think you can get a lot out of it.
The body mind is really smart, and it's been around evolutionarily speaking a lot longer than the conscious mind.
Yes.
So we're basically just scared hairless monkeys running around trying to shout our name as loud as we can, hoping the echo will last a little longer beyond when we die.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And
we
are absolutely terrified of dying. Yes. And then maybe we're in that negotiation. And it might even be just for a business negotiation. But if you're coming in because you're scared, you're worried about losing something, or it just goes down to the fundamental level of I'm worried he's going to get upset and then be violent with me. So I will now have to compromise my integrity. I might have to put myself in a situation where I'm worried for my safety and allow myself to be in that situation.
Right.
Well, if you practice martial arts, you get hit in the face, you get used to that. You just kind of go, oh, it's not my favorite way to spend a Saturday afternoon, but it didn't kill me.
Okay.
Suddenly that fundamental fear just goes away. And now you can meet the moment with that integrity and maintain it in that dynamic situation, no matter what it is that happens.
Right. As an extension of that, do you advocate or do you practice any form of mindfulness meditation or any of those kinds of practices, either as an extension of your kung fu or part of it or separate?
Yeah, I do. I consider Wing Chun can be an incredibly effective, efficient system of personal combat, right? It's very, very efficient. Straight line, point A to point B. Of course, reality is there are no straight lines, but it's good to start with the ideal in mind kind of thing, right? So it is a very physical practice of learning how to not get hurt, not get beat up, but also it is, think of it kind of like the Wing Chun system is composed of six forms. Each of the forms are composed of a series of postures that you embody, right? So if you think of it like choreography, you just learn the choreography and you are embedding into your neuromuscular system the positions of ideal structural integrity. But the process of doing that can be very meditative. And what it's doing is it forces your mind to focus on just a very small idea. Just here's the position of integrity. That's not good. This is good. And it forces your mind to be under your intention and control. So for me, that's why it is so incredibly effective, is that it kind of is the hot rod version of meditating. Instead of just sitting zazen, staring at a wall and letting your mind run amok until it gets tired and then settles down, takes 15, 20 years to get there, or you do a martial art like Wing Chun where you're laser focusing your attention and you are not allowing it to wander at all. You're laser focused on the smallest movements and the smallest changes in positioning. You're now bringing your mind under your control instead of letting it control you. So that's why, to me, it is such a phenomenal mindfulness practice and meditation, because it's a moving meditation that gets results in a way that I've never seen any other approach do.
Well, I think it's very important to cultivate some kind of practice to put us in the present moment, and we are more distracted than ever before. You know, there's so many more things. I don't think that the brain has evolved to the extent that it can process everything that is being thrown at us.
Oh, this is a deep rabbit hole.
Yeah, sure. Let's just dive in.
Okay. So, the cognitive psychology, what's really cool is that cognitive scientists are trying to catch up to understanding why what magicians and mentalists do actually work. So they've been doing a lot of research into how we navigate reality. And a cool scientist said, reality is a wonderful place. You've just never been there, right? Because we don't experience reality.
Yeah.
We experience what our senses tell our brains, and our brains interpret as reality.
Yes.
So here's a really cool thing that happens. Our sense of touch on an evolutionary scale is so much more ancient than vision, right? So we've gotten really good at the sense of touch. An amoeba has a sense of touch, not even a central nervous system, but it can kind of feel what's food and what's poison, right? So our bodies are really good at the sense of touch. Vision is so processor heavy, takes so much work and effort that there's this really cool experiment. The experimenters hooked up a light to a button. So you push the button, the light flashes. Okay? So they push the button, light flashes. But then they start messing with it. They start delaying the flash of the light by just a very, very small fraction of a millisecond kind of thing, right? So what winds up happening is the scientists have set up the expectation that when you push the button, the light flashes instantly, right?
Right.
So that's what happens. So that's what your mind makes happen. Because now the light is flashing maybe 300 milliseconds later than the input of the button. Now, the scientist, once you've acclimated to that and the brain is still fudging the numbers a little bit, right?
Right.
You still feel the push of the button and experience the flash of the light at the same time. But it's your brain kind of compensating for that delay. But now there's this weird thing that can happen. The scientists remove the delay from the flash, and then you experience the flash happening before you actually push the button.
Yes.
Which is a really trippy experience, right?
It is trippy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you're actually doing that all day long, every day. Your vision input and understanding of what that is a couple hundred milliseconds behind what you're actually feeling. Right? So you're actively experiencing a reality that's a couple hundred milliseconds too late, right? So that's why in martial arts, when you learn to function in your body, as soon as you get connected to your opponent, and ballroom dancers will tell you this, swing dancers, anybody, you can feel that person's intent oftentimes before they're even consciously aware of what they're doing. You can respond a half second before they're even aware they're going to do something.
That's
It feels like magic.
Yeah, that's right.
No, so if you're only focused on what you're seeing, you're going to be missing a huge part of the program. So that's why martial arts gives you that physical grounding to feel whether this choice will be in integrity or not.
Yes.
Across the board.
Yes.
Right? So your body mind is really smart. Your mind mind.
Your mind mind isn't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always there. So that's why I like to say there are two times that we live in. Echo time is what you think about reality. And real time is the physical space.
Right.
So if you as a martial artist can function in real time, it gives you that superhuman ability to respond before the other person who is living in echo time is even consciously aware of what's happening. And most people are living in echo time.
Echo time in real time.
They live in their thoughts of what they think is real. And none of it is actually real. None of it. So they're living in a complete fantasy world and take it as what's actually happening.
That's awesome.
But you get real focused on what's real when you get punched in the face.
That's right. I there are a couple of things that resonated, but one in particular, I love this echo time versus real time. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna put that in the show notes and attribute that to you. But have you read the book The Sports Gene by David Epstein?
No, I've never even heard of it.
I've just started reading it, but they were talking about baseball batters. And when you actually look at, everyone thinks that good batters are all about reaction time because they've got faster reaction speed to a ball coming pitched at them than others. And it turns out that's not the case because as you were saying, the eye doesn't have enough time. It's going to swing and miss every time if it waits for the ball to come. So actually what's happening is that the brain understands the pattern of how the ball is spinning. So the brain already knows where the ball is going to be before it gets there. And that that half, you know, whatever millisecond that is that you swing before the ball is there, that that allows, you know, the best batters to hit it. They understand, they recognize the patterns by the way that the ball is spinning. They know where to swing the bat. And
exactly,
there was an experiment. So one of the best female pitchers, Jenny Finch, I think is her name. She was a softball pitcher. And what she was doing was throwing the ball softball style to these major league batters, and they kept missing, even though it was so much slower. But it wasn't. Right. It just proved the point that it's not that you're reacting to the visual stimulus. What's happening is that to be able to hit the ball, you have to put yourself in real time. And when they're exactly. trying to hit the ball coming at them slower, and it's a bigger ball and it should be much easier, but they just struggled. It's because they're working in echo time, and echo time is too slow.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. And very cool. In the context of the mentalism world, those years that they've spent cultivating that exact skill set isn't serving them in the new context of the softball, because they're still bringing to the experience the patterns and expectations of Major League Baseball speeds.
Right.
And it's a completely different context.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of, this is what happens because of this and that, that the mentalist makes use of in the context of a show. Now, here's a really cool thing along that same lines of your eye knows exactly where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
That's in pickpocketing.
Ah, right.
If you look at pickpockets, Apollo Robbins is a consummate gentleman and amazing, amazing pickpocket. And he talks about how you're usually doing a couple things at the same time, which is giving the mark something to focus on and pay attention to, so that your mind can only attend to a very limited range of stimulus and input.
Yes.
So your mind is now focused on the thing he's doing in front of you, so that your mind doesn't have the bandwidth to perceive his hand taking your wallet from the back.
Yes.
Right? Now, he figured out through experience, it wasn't something that he read in a book and then goes, okay, that makes sense. He figured this out from experience. If he moved his hand in a direct line trying to get someone's attention, their brain would figure out where his hand was going before his hand would get there and already figure that out and then have the bandwidth to attend to his hand stealing the wallet. However, if he moved his hand in an arc or any kind of non-linear path, it doesn't allow the brain that shortcut answer. And now the brain has to pay attention to it and come along for the ride.
Yeah.
And that's how he maintains control and ownership of that person's attention. It's fantastic, right? I love that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Straight line won't work. Curve the hand.
Yeah.
They can't look away.
Wow.
Like, that's amazing.
Very
and
cool.
That's an evolutionary process that you're not going to outthink your way out of it. Like, it's a really strange sensation to be pickpocketed as a mentalist, right? Like, we were in Vegas and he demonstrated some stuff, and it was a delight and a joy and terrifying to feel that same manipulation of attention that he's a master at that I do on stage, but it's so neat to feel it myself. It was really cool.
Yeah, very cool. So beware of people waving their hands in arc formation.
Oh, absolutely. For the city dwellers, I know it's more common, I think, in England, where there are signs that say, careful, they're pickpockets.
That's right.
Pickpockets love those signs.
Really?
Yeah, because that means that you see the sign and you go, oh no, pickpockets, did they get my wallet? You reach for it, you touch it, and you go,
there it is.
Nope, that's still
right.
There we go.
That's right.
Now you've just told the guy where
it is.
So now he just follows you until your awareness drops down again. And now he knows exactly where to score.
Where to go. Oh, very.
So fight the urge to touch your wallet, everybody out there in podcast land. Yeah, if you see a sign like that, be real cool.
Yes. Yeah, I never thought of that. I always thought, you know, sometimes you can see it's sort of obvious when there's a ruse that's a fake. There's a fake ruse. I've mm-hmm. seen that, and there's like a yep. you know, a shouting match or something that you're looking at that, and you know someone's oh, yeah. coming up behind you to grab your wallet. So whenever I see that, I actually, and maybe I shouldn't, but I put my hand where my wallet is, and you know, protect it or whatever. But Oh, very cool. We've covered quite a lot of ground, Jonathan. So I want to be respectful of your time. But I did want to just ask you a little bit around your own views or your philosophy around uncertainty and dealing and working in uncertainty. And everyone has their different levels of comfort with uncertainty. I think we all need a little bit of uncertainty in our lives. Some people, you know, they thrive on a lot. Right. But we can't get around it. You know, everything in the world, unless, you know, anything you do, even if you decide I'm going to, you know, stay in bed for 3 months, you know, there's huge amounts of uncertainty no matter what you do. But I'm just wondering, you've done some really interesting things, and you have an interesting way of understanding how people think. What are your views on uncertainty?
Yeah, it is essential for success, mm-hmm. and the degree to which you're comfortable with uncertainty, for me, is a really good predictor of how successful you're going to be. Mm-hmm. But with that, being uncertain isn't always a sign that things are going right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like freedom is the antithesis of certainty, really, mm-hmm. right? Freedom and opportunity and a wide open horizon, right? Who knows what tomorrow can bring? That's the dream we tell ourselves we want, but it is scary as all get out.
Yeah.
And really, it boils down to understanding you are responsible for the choices that you make. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, when they are worried about that uncertainty, what they're really worried about is not having a system that works. Right? So to mitigate that uncertainty, look to successful people that have done it already. Right? So when I wanted to transition from doing mind reading shows at bars and that kind of thing and go, you know what, there's a lot of good money to be made on huge stages and all these markets, but I have no idea how in the world to make it work. I could work through that uncertainty by just diving in and spending the sweat equity of trying and failing and trying and failing, or I could find a way of presenting value to somebody who knows exactly the stuff I want to know, and then go on tour with him for a year and a half, managing his show, just being his right-hand man, basically, to learn the business of doing those shows. So now I have a surefire way of doing business. So I eliminated a lot of that uncertainty to create the freedom of being my own boss and my own business kind of thing, right? So it's kind of neat working in a field where surprise and uncertainty is the coin I work with, right? I create that amazement and uncertainty, but maybe people really can read minds. Maybe he really can read my facial recognition. Oh my goodness. What? There's this whole world beyond what I thought was possible. Oh my God. Right. I actually like to mitigate as much of that uncertainty as possible. I love to maximize some types of uncertainty. I don't know what problems I'm going to have next year. I don't know what kind of opportunities I will be able to make use of a year from now. And that's exciting. However, I feel fairly certain that I will be able to take care of myself, make ends meet, and be a good person and be somebody cool other people want to be around. So to me, I feel like there's good uncertainty and really not good uncertainty. So I try to maximize one, minimize the other.
Yeah. Okay. That's a cool, you know, that's a very profound way of looking at the problem of uncertainty, and you know, a very cool, you know, cool way of looking at life, as you have a very interesting and cool life. So it's been working clearly. I just want to end with, I just want to actually just ask you if there's anything that we didn't cover that you think, you'd like to cover before we kind of put a bow on it. And obviously we can talk about where people can find you on social media and the internet and everything, but is there anything that we maybe didn't get a chance to cover that you'd like to?
Ooh, not really.
I mean, we could go on for hours if we really, really wanted to. But
oh yeah, for sure. But I think a good idea to leave people with is I usually see people as two types of people: those who take credit and those who take responsibility. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are willing to take credit if things go right, and we're kind of predisposed to do that. If we have success, it's because of the things we do. If something goes wrong, well, it's because there were circumstances outside my control. But when we're looking at other people, something goes wrong, it's because they're a screw up. And if they are successful, it's because they were lucky and they were outside forces at play. So really flip that wiring. Be responsible. Choose being responsible. Take ownership for where you are right now, because that is ground zero. There's no other thing that you can do that'll really make any difference until you accept that you are the only person who's responsible for your life and living with the consequences of the choices you make. Like, that's it. Nobody else is going to do that for you. And the faster you own up to that, the faster you can start making real fundamental positive change.
Excellent. Jonathan, this has been a pleasure. For people that want to know more about you, how to find you, where are some of the best places to do that?
Yeah, the best place is just go to alifewelldesigned.com. That's the kind of resource I've been building for people who are interested in making cool change and understanding why they do what they do. And that's kind of my online hub. For my performing, if you want to book me to do a show and you want to make use of my time that way, johnnyzavant.com is my performing kind of character, like an idiot savant, but with a Z. Right? So just JonnyZavant. So you can see what the mind reading stuff is all about. And on the horizon, the book that I'm going to be writing is basically blank like a mind reader, right? Because everybody would love the ability to read minds. So I'll just teach you how to think about life and relationships and all that kind of stuff so that you can navigate reality like a mind reader.
That's very cool. Before we go, is there a little taster of that book that you can share, a little snippet or idea of give people a sense of what
basically if what you've heard already is cool, then I'm pretty sure you'll like it, because I'm still in these are such big ideas.
Yes.
And in some ways they're actually not. They're so small that it's difficult. I mean, it's just, again, like Kung Fu, the basic idea is punch the guy in the face. Like that's all it boils down to. But how you do that, oh man, it could take a lifetime to understand. Yeah. So it's still just a glimmer in my eye for right now. But if you want to come along for the ride, if you go to alifewelldesigned.com and you sign up for the email list there, where you'll get the 10 elements of an effective mind. These are 10 things that you can do to start getting your head right. If you're part of the email list, I'll be sending out updates and previews and all that kind of fun stuff. So that's really the number one place for people to be kind of kept in the loop, is to sign up for that list.
Awesome. Jonathan, this has been fabulous. I really had a blast doing this. So
my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All the best with the book and all the continued success. This was great. I hope people check you out. And all the best. Thank you very much.
You got it. And best thoughts to you and everybody out there in podcast land.
Thanks, Jonathan. So that's Jonathan Pritchard. I hope you guys enjoyed that. And if you did, and you want to learn more about Jonathan, you can check out the link to his site, to all of his social media presences in the show notes. As usual, we always feature everything that we talked about in the show notes. And once again, if you have any thoughts or feedback, I would love to hear from you. allthingsrisk@gmail.com is the best place to do that. We will be back next week with, yes, another great conversation. I know I say that every conversation is great, and I do think that that's the case. It's in a completely different area than any of my guests that I have had before in terms of subject matter. But I think it, as you've been following the show, and certainly this has been the case for me, in each conversation, I'm able to extract something, a few things that I can use. And I do find them all connected in a way, even though we've got people from all different walks of life, and we talk about all kinds of things, all kinds of topics. So I think you're going to really enjoy next week as well. And if you liked this show, if you liked the episode, check us out on allthingsrisk.co.uk and subscribe and give us a rating or a review if you feel so inclined. That would help us out a lot. That is it for now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back next week. In the interim, don't forget, risk is life.